Hello, everyone, and welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th inning stretch. And Kevin, we just had an exciting All-Star game. It was cool weather around the St. Paul area, much in the whole central part of the United States. It's kind of a more enjoyable time around baseball right now, I would say.
Yeah, as far as the All-Star event goes, I cannot think of anything that didn't go off just perfectly. It was another well-ran event hosted by the St. Paul Saints, and I thought the event was really good in 2016, but I think they've raised the bar even higher, so whoever's got it next year, they're going to really have a tough act to follow.
Yeah, I think in Chicago next year, so.
That's rumored. It hasn't been official yet,
yeah,
but.
I think that's going to be the deal, but. Before jumping into the show, I do want to just say, Kevin, that I had a moment of utter embarrassment yesterday. After my shoulder had been worked on, I had been going to physical therapy, and they had put me on one of those little machines where they stick the little pads on you, and then you get kind of an electrical impulse that is going through to stimulate the muscles in there and stuff. And the therapist put me on this machine, and he said to me before he walked away, he said, "Well, if you need to add more, you just press this button over here and it'll increase the stimulus to it." And I was like, okay. So about a few minutes later, this other woman came and sat down next to me in a chair when they kind of hooked her up to the machine and kind of got her going. And I was realizing that the impulses that were coming through the machine weren't really as strong anymore. So I was trying to up it. And as I was pressing on this button, nothing was happening. And I was like, wow, this is really kind of weird. And then all of a sudden the woman next to me goes, "What are you doing?" Because when they hooked her up, they changed the thing on the setting on the screen. So I was actually increasing her stimulus there. And she was a little irritated with me. So that was my embarrassing moment for the week there, Kevin.
Well, that's the most embarrassing moment. It's really not a bad week, Tom.
Yeah, I would say. Well, let's jump into the American Association this week, Kevin, and we begin by talking about the player of the week and pitcher of the week, Keon Barnum, coming over from the Chicago Dogs to be named player of the week after a monstrous 15 RBI, 5 homer week. Kevin Hilton from the Texas AirHogs becomes the first AirHogs player to be named either and honored in any way this season after a great 8 shutout inning. So both worthy selections, I would say.
Yeah, they were good. The league also agreed with us, so I think we're probably on to something.
And they were smart to agree with us, for sure. Monday night was the exciting home run derby, and it really was exciting, Kevin. I mean, that was really quite a show.
Yeah, I had Keon Barnum pick to win the whole thing. And for me, it was a different experience. I wrote about on the blog the other day, actually being down on the field for it, you really get much better feel for just how powerful these guys are that are hitting these baseballs out of the ballpark. It was quite a sight to be up close and personal for. But in the end, it was Brady Shoemaker, local Saints player, winning the home run derby on the last swing over Leopoldo Pena.
Yeah, an exciting final round where Pena hits 9 home runs in his 3 minutes of play. Shoemaker gets 7, and they came down to the beef ball, which was worth 2 home runs. Shoemaker winds up drilling that for a 2-run homer, sent to a second final round, and they were tied after that. And then finally Shoemaker won in the 3-pitch third final round. So really exciting competition, and it looked like the players were really into it and having a lot of fun. And I think that made it a lot more fun.
Yeah, well, what else did we find out about beef ball?
I don't know. What did we find out?
Remember, we were talking about it. We found out that Beefball was the nickname of Denny Gehrig when he was in high school. Denny Gehrig of the Seaburn Railroaders broadcast team. So, any guys out there that run into Denny? Beefball.
That's an interesting thing because he weighs like about 100 pounds. So I'm trying to figure out how he came up with a nickname like that. But
I think it's when you got like a 400-pound guy, you nickname him Tiny.
Yeah, that could be the case. After an exciting home run derby, Kevin, you know, the All-Star game was good. I don't know if it lived up to the same hype of the Home Run Derby, because that was really kind of exciting to watch. But 7-3 victory by the North. Colin Willis of the Gary South Shore Railcats is chosen as the MVP of the game. It was a good game, though.
Yeah, it was. South got off to an early lead, and North just kind of pecked away at the lead and eventually overtook the South in the late innings. So just like the Civil War, the North defeats the South.
It was kind of looking like Cleburne Railroader Day after Chase Simpson homered in the first inning there. And then John Nestor had a big hit later on in the inning where they scored a run. And it was looking like we were going to be talking about never hearing the end of it from Brad Allred down there in Cleburne. But the North did battle back. And Colin Willis came off the bench, had a big double in an inning that the North wound up taking the lead, and then added a two-run double where they extended the lead. And I think everybody was kind of leaning towards Simpson until Willis stole the show.
Yeah, to peel back the curtain a little bit, they gave all of us in press row a vote, and we were all kind of like struggling for who was going to be MVP. I think some had Nate Sampson, some had Wes Darvall, some had Chase Simpson. And then Colin Willis inserted himself in the game and got a double to start one rally, and then a broken bat single to score two. And just as the ballots were being collected, all of us were crossing names out and putting in Colin Willis. So it was kind of some drama up in the press row too.
We'll believe that our vote actually counted towards something. You know, you never know. Sean Aronson might have just overruled us and made us feel good about it, though. But it sounded like we had a stake.
Well, he was talking about it on air, too, that he goes, right now I'm looking at a lot of ballots with names crossed out.
It did work out that way. Well, let's jump into it.
I will say, too, that I did go back and watch the broadcast of All-Star game, and which featured Jeremy Martinez and Nate Sampson both being mic'd up, and it provided a really neat sideshow to the game, so you can watch a game in the archives of AmericanAssociation.tv, so I recommend doing that to get a chance.
Well, let's jump into each of the individual teams around the league, and Kevin and I not only wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on with each team, but to kind of talk about what we expect to see in the second half of the season, we first of all begin in St. Paul, where they have suffered a huge loss. Dustin Crenshaw is placed on the disabled list and then winds up signing in Mexico. And that starting rotation was already a little bit suspect and now became, you know, kind of a serious mystery to us.
Right now you got Brian Zimmerman, who's been a revelation for the Saints. He's got a 3.34 ERA now. Jake Mathis, who has struggled, he's pitching right now. He's given up two home runs and two innings tonight to Cleburne. So he's a starter. And you got Eddie Medina, who's been battling injuries. So you got three established starters right now, just a lot of TBAs. So we'll see who Samus can pull all the hat. Oh, I forgot about Benji Wade. Benji Wade did pitch adequately last night, but I don't think he's an arm you can expect to be that's going to be a ace of your staff. So it's tough sledding for the Saints. Look at the big picture. Right now they're tied for first in the North Division. So they can find some starting arms, and the bats can swing like they have most of the year, and I think they'll be all right.
They do get a big return when Blake Schmidt comes off the disabled list. The team was kind of suffering a big loss when they lost both Joey Wong and Blake Schmidt. So they're both are guys they were using at the shortstop position. So his return should not only help to kind of solidify the infield, but Schmidt was having quite a season before suffering the injury. So that was a big addition, I think, that will really kind of help that pitching staff by coming up with a guy that as long as the pitchers can keep the ball in the ballpark, they at least have a little bit better defense now.
We were talking about Home Run Derby being Monday night because I'm watching the Saints game right now and it looks like it's going on right now. Three homers in the inning and two-thirds for that Seaburn has said Daniel Robertson, Zach Narrier, and now Hunter Clandon.
Well, that's not a good start for Mathis tonight, that's for sure. Well, Kevin, let's talk
They're all solo shots, so I guess if you can find a positive in it, it's that.
Well, Kevin, let's talk about the St. Paul Saints at this moment. We know that there's going to be some challenges in terms of developing a good starting staff for them. Got a great solid bullpen out there. Leading the leagues in runs right now. So what is the expectation of the Saints for you as we head down the stretch?
Well, I think it's the same expectation George Stamos has, and that's a league championship. You know, he's going to make every move he can to try to get the guys in place to make a run in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens.
The question is this team deep enough to be able to do that? Let's take, even if he adds one starter, let's say even an incredibly solid starter at this point, is that enough to keep this team as one of the two playoff teams from the North?
I think if you add a starter, a reliable starter, and maybe even a second starter that's borderline, yeah, I think they can do it because that's, like you said, the bullpen's been strong, so... Guy throws a clunker, you know, you can give him a quick hook in, still try to stay in the game.
I think the big concern that George Stamos has heading down the stretch here is that there were three guys in the league who lead in appearances out of the bullpen. Two of those are St. Paul Saints pitchers. And I think your concern has to be at some point here that if you keep pulling these guys out every night that you're going to wind up burning out this bullpen. The return of Mike Devine was obviously a big addition, especially now that he's kind of well-rested as a guy that could give you 25 outings over the next 50 days or something. It's just a question of can the hitting keep producing at this rate? And it sure looks like at this point that they're able to do that.
Yeah, the batting order is solid from top to bottom. The addition of Josh Romanski can potentially help if he can start performing up to 2017 levels. And Chesney Young has really kicked it in gear. As someone that was expected to hit around 300, he was hovering around 180 for quite a while, but last month has got his average up in the 240s. So, yeah, I see no problem with the bats. And the bullpen and the starters kind of go hand in hand. The starters get deeper in the game, so both ends not going to be used as much, and they'll be okay come late August.
We move on to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, who entered into the All-Star break being swept by St. Paul at home. They have a lot of games coming up against Winnipeg, St. Paul, Chicago. Is this a cause for concern for them at this point, or should they just look at that as a blip in the road?
Well, you know you're going to have to play them at some point, so... now's the time, and as they come out of that game, I think we'll have a better read on if Fargo-Moorhead is going to be a playoff team.
Well, let's talk about their expectations, Kevin. We entered the season, both of us thought that this was the team to beat in the North as they had solid rotation, great bullpen. Jeff Broussard has been everything the team could have asked for and more. One of the deepest lineups in the league right now. Is this the team to beat in the North?
Well, it's going to be one of the three teams to beat in the North. I don't see where they've stuck out any further from St. Paul or Chicago. So, the rotation looks solid. Looks like you got some arms coming back, and late inning guys have been good. So, we'll see what happens.
I think the big advantage for looking at this team is that I don't really see any glaring holes to them. There's not a spot where you look at it and think, wow, they need to improve here or improve there if they're really going to be a team that's making a big playoff run. And I think that gives them a big advantage over a team like St. Paul, even a team like Chicago as well, which is great at the top end of their rotation, but struggling below that. And we'll talk about that in a minute more. But I don't see glaring holes with this team. And I wonder if as long as they play as they should, that this is just a team that is destined to win that division.
Well, that's the big key, is play as they should, which, as I saw last weekend, they got three at home to St. Paul, so the talent is there. It's just are they playing up to the level that they should be? So that'll be what one should look out for.
We move on to the Chicago Dogs, who came into the All-Star break as the hottest team in the league, then came out of it and got thumped two times by Milwaukee to open up the second half of the season. Kevin, this is a team that, as I just said, I look around at their rotation, and the top half of that with Westfall has been unbelievable this season. Austin Wright has been okay. But that the bottom of that rotation is really suspect, and I wonder if they have enough to be able to make a playoff run.
Yeah, they can score runs by the bushel alone, and I think the bullpen's very good for them too, but you kind of pointed that out, that the rotation might be their current bugaboo, so look for the chops to go, and look for an arm or two yet. Him and the rest of the league.
And there will be some solid starters out there, I would think, who may be available. We'll be talking about some of those teams in a minute. Kevin, let's move on to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. We want to first of all recognize a few things going on with the team. Kevin McGovern winds up setting the franchise record for strikeouts all time. I think it was his 436th, if I remember reading that correctly. It might have been more than that, so I apologize if I'm wrong there, Kevin. Wes Darville joins Team Canada. That's pretty exciting news for him, so congratulations. And a surprise release. You didn't seem as surprised for this, but after the season that he had last year in Kansas City, I was a little surprised to see Marcus Crescentini released.
Well, look at the numbers. It just wasn't happening for him with Winnipeg. I know we saw him have a very good year for Kansas City last year, but frankly, it's a results-based league, and Winnipeg wasn't getting the results out of them, and Fournier had to do what he had to do.
Well, Kevin, as we look at the stretch run here for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, I'm looking at 12 games to start out the second half, where they have three against Texas. They've taken the first two of those, two against Fargo-Moorhead at home, then three at Gary, and then four at Fargo. I'm thinking if this team is going to make a run right now, this has got to be their time that we see either they're in the playoffs or it's over.
Right. They've kind of been the forgotten team of the North Division, where they were amongst the top three for quite a while, kind of fell down a ways, but they're working themselves up back up too. So, yeah, I think you got it right. This is a time which you got to make some hay.
It's interesting. They have the fourth best record in the division, the fifth best record in the league. And, you know, last year we heard a lot of grumbling about how good the South was, and that the team that won in the North would probably be worse than the top three teams in the South. And I think it wound up materializing that way. But it looks kind of the reverse this season.
Yeah, and I think they'll average itself out too as we get later in the season. There's not going to be as much cross-divisional play, and there's going to be even more separation than what we got already. So I think by the end of the year you'll see, I think the top three teams will be separated pretty well from the bottom three.
Milwaukee Milkmen win the first two games after the All-Star break. Kevin, we talked a few moments ago about how many teams are going to be out there looking for starting pitching, and Milwaukee has three outstanding starters in House, Ventura, and Kraus. I got to believe there's a lot of teams making calls to Gary McClure right now.
Oh, I think there should be. We'll see what McClure's philosophy is, because really I don't see the Milkmen getting to the point where they're going to be able to make a move as far as getting a playoff spot. And you got Tanner Tyson in the bullpen with 1.35 ERA, and Miles Smith has been nice on the bullpen too. So, you know, for a team that's not doing so well, and it gets reflected a little bit in the power rankings, they're really not that bad of a ball club.
Not at all. It's really been just kind of a lack of hitting right now that has hurt them, because that pitching staff is as solid as it gets.
Right. I just think they got put way too far behind the eight ball with the off-field stuff, where they had to play a bunch of their season in Kokomo, Indiana.
You know, Kevin, I wonder if you're Gary McClure at this moment, is it important to you that you finish ahead of Gary? So you say, we don't want to be a last-place team in our first season, so maybe I don't deal guys away because I want to, you know, give us the best chance to still be, you know, to do something that would really, you know, be a kind of a, a, hopefully kind of a boon for the club by finishing in fifth instead of in last? Or do you say, hey, look, I can start trying to get some assets for next season, and maybe it's time to trade these guys? That's kind of an interesting philosophy if you look at it.
I really don't think there's much motivation for fifth or sixth. If you're not making the playoffs, I guess it doesn't really matter where you finish. So I don't see that as being motivation. I know we're getting close to the deadline where if you trade a guy, you can still get him back. But if you pass that deadline, you cannot get him back. So the Lockers got to look at maybe deal some guys there that you know that you'll be able to sign back after or get back as a player to be named later. So you got to make a tough call. It's like someone on life support. You got to figure out, do you need to pull the plug or have some faith that they're going to live. So they made a tough decision for Gary McClure to make.
I think it's August 1st is the deadline that you can trade a player for that same player to come back at some point there. So that would be interesting to see if anybody's willing to make a move into that nature at this point. Gary, South Shore Railcats, obviously kind of an exciting time around there with Colin Willis being named as the All-Star Game MVP. But this is a team that is floundering, and we've never really seen Gary as a big trader, except for a couple seasons ago when they dealt away Charlie Rosario in a situation just like this where the team really was out of the playoff run. And I'm wondering if Colin Willis, guys like this, could be available.
Yeah, like you said, I've never really known Tegger to be much of a trader. And gosh, it'd be good for some of these guys that have been playing for Gary for multiple years. It would be nice for them to get a chance to play in the playoffs where they actually do feel like he got a chance. I know Gary did make it last year, but let's face it, it was going to be tough for them to beat St. Paul and whoever came out of the South. So I think Tagger kind of owes it to a few guys that have been around there for a while to try to get them into a spot where they can make the playoffs with another team. How he feels about that is a totally different thing. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, we head to the South, and right now the Cleburne Railroaders are about as hot as it gets down here in the South Division, winning 8 of their last 9 games, including the first 2 of the series against the St. Paul Saints, much to the chagrin of my buddy Kevin here. Kevin, this team looks like what we expected at the start of the season, and now they have added Angel Reyes, who played in Wichita and Lincoln last season, comes back after being released by the Miami Marlins organization. This is a team that is really solid 1 through 9. Rotation looks good. Pitch bullpen looks pretty solid out there. Is this a team that just right now there's really no reason to believe they can't or shouldn't win this division?
I'm sorry, who are you talking about here?
I think the Cleburne Rail Riders, is that what it was?
Oh, you mean the 19, they're a heck of a team. Gehrig looks like he's having a really good year at first base, only 24 years old. But he'll be on a pace for, I'd say, like 47 homers and 173 RBIs. Got a good, solid guy with Tony Lazzari at second base, who I can see him getting over 102. RBIs, tell you that Ruth guy, he's aging a little bit, put on some weight, but I just see him as a guy that I can see 60 homers and 165 RBIs out of him before the season's done. So, and you know, the pitching staff is looking really good also. It's going to be a heck of a year for them.
Those 27.
Wade Hoyt has been dominant.
Those 27 Yankees.
Is not all the question for him. So
the 27 Yankees of Cleburne, I guess, is where they're at now.
I'm getting those two mixed up. I'm sorry. Yeah, Cleburne, I know today after batting practice, a lot of them stopped by. There's a gentleman here sizing guys up for championship rings. And I know they're working out details on the parade route, and bands line up, and figuring out where they can get the horses from. Well, hell, Texas horses are everywhere. But possibly the greatest team in our lifetime.
You know, I do have to say that people should appreciate that as the tongue-in-cheek comment that Kevin is making, because if Josh Robertson had heard any players were sizing up rings, I think they'd have been cut right that moment, because this is not a guy who'd be talking about championships until you're holding that final strike, especially after what happened in Winnipeg a couple years ago for Wichita. So a lot of excitement what's going on down there, but I know they're not that excited at this point.
Oh, the town is besides herself. And, you know, that's good, because Cleburne, I don't know if you ever see the sign going in the town. Cleburne. Oh, yeah, it says Cleburne. We're Dallas without, well, pretty much everything. So.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, no, I can't be that mean. Cleburne's a nice town. I can't wait till they get it done.
It is a beautiful area. I loved last year. Last 2 years, I've actually been to there and have enjoyed my time in Cleburne, fantastic city. And again, for us old people, I had for the very first time seen a city that actually had a Citizens on Patrol group. I thought that was awesome for those Police Academy fans who know what I'm talking about. That was pretty cool. So good job.
I hear the Walmart there is top notch.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I'm not going to deny that either. That is very true. Well, Kevin, the Sioux City Explorers, as hot as the Cleburne Railroaders are right now, Sioux City...
Oh, no one as hot as the Cleburne Railroaders.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you're getting into a little bit of hyperbole here.
They have won 6 straight games right now, Kevin. But the thing for them is that starting rotation is you know, kind of in flux right now and has a lot of gaping holes to it. And I'm wondering if there's enough here, great bullpen, solid starting lineup. I don't think this team has enough to wind up passing Cleburne, but they look like they're at least a number 2 team in the division.
I think the 2019 Yankees can't catch up to the Cleburne Railroaders. I mean, come on, let's be serious here.
That's true. That's very true.
They should just not even have Cleburne in those standings. I can see Cleburne just running the table for the rest of the year. So don't even list them in the association standings, because it's just not even worth having them on there. Just put an X by their name to say, yeah, they're in the playoffs. And don't even list the rest of the standings, because, yeah, it's... I feel blessed to be in their presence right now.
For fans wanting to know why Kevin is so... hyped, we'll use the word, about Cleburne. Do you want to explain your wager that you made?
Yeah, we just made a little friendly wager on the Cleburne-St. Paul series.
You and Brad.
Finishing tonight, yes. We made it on Real Talk Live. And I'm supposed to talk nice about their, the greatest team in our lifetime, the team in their batting practice tops that look like a bunch of traffic cones running around the field.
Well, that's quite a picture there for sure. No doubt about that. You know, one thing I have to say, heading back to Sioux City for a moment there, Kevin, is I have been impressed by the way that this team puts together rallies. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I think they have had 9 or 10 innings where they have scored 6 or more runs in that inning. I just find that crazy. This team all of a sudden can just do something, you know, something clicks in them that they just rattle off 5 or 6 runs like it's no big deal whatsoever.
Right, yeah. It's just a matter of keeping the runs off the board. And, you know, we're talking about Taylor Jordan in the last couple of weeks, and we were told, well, he'll be fine after his bout with heat exhaustion, but, well, frankly, you know, the ERA is still up there at a 5.4, so your top starter that you got going right now is
Eric Karch.
Taking a look. Yeah, Karch has been added to Carlos Sierra's been.
That's decent. True, yeah.
But you get into these playoff series, and if you get 4 or 5 innings out of your starter, keep you in the game. Sioux City is the only team that's got deep enough of a bullpen where you can turn it over to the bullpen early and still get to the finish line. I mean, granted, against Cleburne, it's going to be, well, possibly the tallest task ever. We're talking about a little league team trying to beat the Minnesota Twins. But, you know, it's not possible. That's not impossible because, frankly, you get into the playoffs and you only have to go 3-2. That's not too tough.
That's very true. And
even
you know,
if
maybe
it's against the greatest team of our lifetime.
Maybe the solution to that problem for them is starting closer Matt Poverenko there for a couple of games, because it sure sounded like he was hyped for that opportunity.
He was hyped about everything. It was a very, very engaging conversation when we were down in the field for the home run derby.
Yeah, him and Nate Gerken were quite enjoyable to talk to, for sure about that. Well, Kevin, last year's champion, the Kansas City T-Bones, find themselves in third place coming out of the All-Star break, split the first two games to start out the second half of the season with the Sioux Falls Canaries. They have a huge loss when Nick Lee signs in Mexico. Probably the best pitcher on the staff so far this season winds up heading to Mexico. And then they lose Christian Correo to the Pan Am Games. We always, you know, kind of pat Joe Calfapietra on the back for the amazing moves he makes, and he's got to have filled two big roles right off the bat.
Yeah, he will, and there's a guy capable of doing it. It's Joe, but they have to make a point too that possibly at some point this weekend he's going to get his 1,000th managerial win. So you don't get 1,000 wins by being a dummy, but with him, he just needs the guys that he's put all the faith in to perform. Daniel Nava or Chris Colabelli, he needs those guys to be the guys that he gave up a Daniel Robertson and a Ryan Brett for, who's just following the ball for the world's biggest baseball dynamo, the Cleburne Railroaders. So, and you get the bullpen straight out, get guys throwing some strikes, never know what could happen. We have to mention was Jose Mesa Jr. had an incredible game last night.
Yes, he did. 13 strikeouts in 6 innings. That was quite a performance by the young man.
Yeah, I was sitting up in the press box with David Scrivens of the Red Sox scouting department. I made sure to point out Mesa Jr.'s outing to him. So I'm going to apologize in advance if Mesa Jr. gets signed by Boston.
To Kansas City fans, that is. Not to Mesa himself.
Yes.
That helped him. Well, I'm sure he'd be thrilled as heck about that.
I should get a commission to get signed.
It would be kind of ironic, I have to honestly say, if Joe Calfapietra were to win his 1,000th game in front of his good buddy George Samus, who won his 1,000th game last year.
Yeah, it would definitely be a mixed emotion for George, though, wouldn't it? You know, George doesn't take kindly to losing, even if it is to his friend. But yeah, it would be kind of crazy that in 2 consecutive years, a manager won their 1,000th game at CHS Field.
Next, we move to the Sioux Falls Canaries, a team that has been extremely streaky, a lot of ups and downs this season, a lot of talent there, but boy, today they lose Taylor Hill, and you just got to wonder if that is really the end of a Sioux Falls Canaries run.
I think it is. With all due respect to Keith and Keogh and Alex Bolshears, who are the two established starters left on that team, it's just, you know, the batters, they got to get a bat in order they can make some runs, but for them, the challenge has been holding the opponents down, and boy, losing Taylor Hill is a pretty crushing blow to them.
I think Hill was the only starter with an ERA under 5. So that just, you know, this team can score runs, but you can't be scoring 7 or 8 runs every single night. And that's what they're going to have to do, because right now this team just cannot get people out.
Yeah, you can do that in the ballpark you're in, but, yeah, like you said, it's a matter of holding the opponents down. So I'd expect you're going to see Sioux Falls kind of fade into the second tier of the South Division.
Yeah, I still had them predicted as third, but that sure is looking like it's not going to be a possibility. They're going to fall into the second half of that division, unless Mike Meyer can come up with a starter to somewhat fill that gap for the loss of Hill. We move on to the Lincoln Salt Dogs. You know, an interesting move earlier this season, Kevin, was when Milwaukee traded Teodoro Martinez to Lincoln, hitting .305 at that time, and then he's released by Lincoln this week. I have to admit, that was kind of a surprise to me.
Right, and we don't know the insides of it. We've talked about tons of times on the show where it could have been he might be moving on to the next chapter of his life. There could have been a disagreement with him in the ball club. Heck, he could even be signing with the team somewhere. So, I guess we don't know exactly what the truth is, but yeah, it's a tough bat to lose.
I guess it could be, too, a case where he's going to be out for a couple weeks and they're just releasing him to come back later on, too. I hadn't really thought about that until now, but that happens. We see that happen quite a bit, as a matter of fact. So, Lincoln got to be sellers, I'm thinking, at this point, though, Kevin.
Yeah, 10-game losing streak will do that. It's, when you think about it, you just lost 10% of your games for the entire season. Take away that, then they were a .500 team, but boy, that's going to be tough for them to get back in the hunt now. And we'll see what Bobby Brown does. You know, there's talk now that maybe he might not be long for his job. I'm sure they'll keep him around the rest of the year, but you'll have 2 years in a row where the Salt Dogs have collapsed in the second half of the season.
And we finally end with the Texas Air Hogs, who won 4 games in a row heading into the All-Star break, 3 of those against the Lincoln Salt Dogs, which I know can't really bode well for your confidence in your manager at that point. But we do want to kind of give a little pat on the back out there to Tyler Matzek, who winds up with 7 strikeouts in 2 innings, Kevin.
Yeah, I was kind of cruising around the American Association TV on Saturday night checking games out, and I think Texas and Lincoln was the last one going on, so I tuned in, and yeah, got to see that as it was happening. A pretty impressive outing for Matzek, you know, former major leaguer, and he could be an arm, too, that could help a team looking for a bullpen guy. I know he's also started, too, so maybe he'll get a chance of going in somebody's rotation. We'll see what Chris Bandel feels about moving guys on. I know maybe you've talked to him already about that.
Well, he seems completely supportive of the idea of helping guys to further their career, and if they could do better or get better recognition in another city, he's 100% in favor of that. And I have to wonder about a guy like Kevin Hilton and even Eric Manoah, who's looked really incredible since joining the Air Hogs, that both of those guys have to be coveted by at least a few teams out there looking for starting pitching right now. And you know, there's obviously a call down in Texas to help develop the younger Chinese players. So it makes perfect sense that if they can get some assets or something that would be beneficial for the club in the long term, that you move two guys that could bring in a fairly big haul.
Do they have to hold Joe Calcapietra's feet to the fire on this situation? Because Manoah gets released by Casey, and now he's found success in Texas. You're talking about Robertson and Brett earlier. As much of a magic touch as he had last year with moving guys, we're seeing a trend this year with guys that he gives up on, go somewhere else, and perform well. So,
well, I think last year Jared Mortensen was traded away by Kansas City to Cleburne early on in the year and started out red hot. I think he kind of burned out after a little while, but I think for a while his ERA was right around 3 and he was up to the league lead in strikeouts or something. And so, you know, Joe has guys, a certain look that he's looking for, I guess, out there. And sometimes I guess it works out in another club better or something. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, that was before Cleburne was a world recognized baseball leader.
Well, Kevin, we head to the most exciting part of the show, which is the Kevin Lucco Power Rankings. So I know who's number one now. So let's hear your other 11.
Well, here's what I'm going to preface this. In my heart, I know Cleburne's number one. I mean, there should be like, just so other teams have a chance to be number one, we should just call Cleburne star. Put a star by them. Don't even give them a number ranking. But going by my system in which I take their wins, every team's wins, and add how many games we've won in the last 10, this is how the top 12 shake out. At number 12 is Texas. This was sponsored by Capture Twin Cities, Catholic Twin Cities Photography. They did fine work for Rob and I in the helping the Home Run Derby and All-Star Game. And if your team is coming to St. Paul for a series, look up Capture Twin Cities on Facebook. Yeah. We'll hook you up with Kathy, and we'll make sure that you get some nice images of your players as they play their series in St. Paul. So that plug's over with. Back to the rankings. Number 12 was Texas, 11 Gary. 11 was Lincoln, 10 Gary. Number 9, Sioux Falls. Number 8, Milwaukee. Number 7, Kansas City. Number 6, Winnipeg. Number 5, Sioux City Explorers. Number 4 is Chicago. Number 3 is Fargo. Number 2 is the 1927 Yankees. And number 1 still is St. Paul. But barely. I think the Yankees are going to pass them after tonight.
So it's a one-game difference at the moment.
Right.
Okay.
So. In my point system, St. Paul's at 46, and Fargo and the 27 Yankees are tied at 45.
Well, that does sound like some pretty credible rankings right there that you can't really argue with very much, because Cleburne is red hot, and they have earned, and I know you've always, even before you came up with the system, you've always included how well a team was performing at the time as a indicator of where they deserve to be. So even if they were, let's say, 4 or 5 games behind another team, if they were 9-1, you know, that's a team that deserves better consideration sometimes. So I can't argue with those rankings out there whatsoever, Kevin. And I do want to point out, throwing back out there with Kevin about Capture Twin Cities, is that the group out there, the 4 fantastic photographers, students at Century College out there in St. Paul, Minnesota. Or is it St. Paul? Are they is Century College technically St. Paul, or is that Woodbury or something?
I think it's technically St. Paul.
Okay, so giving a little plug to Century College there as well. Did some fantastic photography out there, and so you will probably see some of the photos you've already seen out there if you've been out there at Minor League Sports Report looking at the All-Star Game, and I have used them in some of my daily recaps as well, because they've had some fantastic photos, and we'll be taking pictures of Saints games for the remainder of the season. So go out with it and get with these guys, because they're doing quite a job out there.
And if you have any questions, just get in touch with Rob and I, and we can get you steered in the right direction.
Absolutely. And you will really like Kathy, Travis, Simona, and Alex. Fantastic group out there. So really, really hardworking and dedicated people, and a lot of fun. So I enjoyed working with them this last week, and we'll look forward to it for the rest of the season. Kevin, what's going on there at the 10th inning stretch?
Well, if you go there, you'll find my wrap-up of the Home Run Derby All-Star Game, the whole two-day festivity, complete with pictures from Capture Twin Cities. You know, I just kind of did it from a perspective of not someone sitting in the seats, but someone that's kind of took in the 2 days as a blogger, you know, someone that knows people from throughout the league. And it was just a little different from being the fan in the stands.
Well, at the Minor League Sports Report, today we came out with a look back at the first part of the season for each of the 12 teams and what I expect to see happen over the remaining 6 weeks. I think we have maybe 7 weeks left in the season right now. So you can go out there and look at your favorite team or all 12 teams if you really want to, and see what if I have any clue whatsoever what I'm talking about, including who I thought was the top player and pitcher for each team out there. And we will continue on now that we've kind of had a little All-Star break hiatus. We'll be back with shows next week, and we'll also be doing some features starting this week. So start catching up on managers, new managers in the league, and as well as player profiles to start finding out more information that's going on. Well, I don't have a final thought, Kevin, this week, but I know you do.
Oh, well, I just cannot drone on enough about how great the Cleburne Railroaders are. The fact that they are 9th in the league in attendance just astounds me. I would think people from Houston, San Antonio, Laredo would all be packing the people to watch this incredible baseball dynamo put waste to the American Association on a nightly basis. It just astounds me.
Well, I'm going to say the 9th in attendance is pathetic, Okay, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to, regardless of how of where the team is at in terms of 27 Yankees, this is one of the best teams in the league. And you know, I've been to Cleveland. It's not like there's a whole lot to do in the city there. So, you know, not getting out to a game doesn't really make sense to me. I got to honestly say to you right there, Kevin.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. But I think you're just gonna see busloads of people come around from Dallas, Fort Worth, maybe even up in the Oklahoma and Louisiana. It just they're gonna have to just add like I'd say 15,000 seats onto the depot because it's just gonna be crazy down there for just the greatest game on dirt.
Yeah, you know,
They're
Kevin.
going to become, America's team now. You're not going to even hear about the Cowboys anymore. It's going to be the Cleveland Railroaders.
I got to say that I guess I'm a little disappointed in the two of us that we only spent probably 6 or 7 minutes talking about Cleveland today out of an hour show. I mean, what's wrong with us?
I think we need to start a new show called This Week in Cleveland Railroaders.
I think you might be right. I think we should have a Facebook Live show. A daily. I mean, and not this week. I mean, it should be like daily.
I think you should get to the point where we're talking to Hunter Clannon's great uncle. We'll run down each player's family tree. We'll know what each one of them has for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
School teachers. Yeah,
Yes.
we got to find people that knew them, you know, way back when they were 4 or 5. It's got to be included.
We'll dig up their little league stats. That's just, yeah, you can't get enough Cleveland Railroader baseball. Greatest game on dirt.
Actually, turf.
So jump on the plane.
Well, on that note, we want to thank you for joining us this week. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.